It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Too often, doctors ignore scientific data, which clearly links emotions to health. But when fear, frustration, loneliness, anxiety, depression, jealousy, or anger takes hold of us, it affects our mood, reactions, job performance, relationships, and ultimately, our physical health. Reclaiming our happiness through emotional freedom serves as the focus for this edition of New Dimensions with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith Orloff is a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice, an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA, and a national best-selling author whose books include the bestsellers Positive Energy, 10 Extraordinary Prescriptions for Transforming Fatigue, Stress, and Fear into Vibrant Strength and Love, Dr. Judith Orloff's Guide to Intuitive Healing, 5 Steps to Physical, Emotional, and Sexual Wellness, Second Sight, and Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. Join us for the next hour as we explore ways to transform our emotions and create a positive, life-affirming outlook with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. My name is Michael Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Judith, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back again. Judith, what was the motivation for you to write this book? What prompted you to do it?
Well, I wrote Emotional Freedom for really two main reasons. One is that I'm a physician who works in a very traditional healthcare system at UCLA, and I've seen that many physicians don't value the spiritual, energetic, or intuitive aspects of emotions. And I see emotions as a path to spiritual awakening. And I want to really present that to people, how to look at the most difficult emotions that we may have and look at these as spiritual challenges in order for our soul to grow. And the second motivation was that my mother, who was a physician, really almost nearly killed herself from the negative emotions that she experienced. At age 70, she retook her medical board exams, which was extremely stressful, and she had lost faith in herself in terms of being able to compete with younger doctors, and so she beat herself up with all kinds of fear and insecurities, and I watched this helpless. And during that time, her lymphoma, which she had had for 20 years, changed cell type to a malignant leukemia. And she agreed that the stress she put herself under caused her eventual death. And although she passed the medical board exams, she sacrificed her life because of all that negativity. And I watched as a daughter, as my mother was destroying herself with negativity she couldn't control. And so my passion is how to get a grip of that negativity in myself and transform it, help patients transform it, help workshop participants transform it, because we live in a world with extreme fear, economic stress, and there is so much negativity around that we need to learn how to rise above it and transform it so that we can be the light-bearing, positive people that we need to be during these times.
How would you define emotional freedom?
Well, emotional freedom is the ability to mindfully and consciously take a look at emotions such as fear and worry and frustration, and to be able to transform them to more positive states such as hope and courage and patience. And so being able to look at the minute details of our lives and apply these strategies that I talk about with emotional freedom so that we're not brought down by these. And this increases the liberation that we feel inside, and it allows us to experience the joy that we're destined to experience if we can get a grip on it. Truly a form of enlightenment to be able to transform depression with hope. And to, you know, in the book, I present each emotion as a spiritual catalyst. And that the reason we experience each emotion is to experience and transform it to its counterpoint. For instance, I talk about how to transform fear into courage. You can't have courage without fear. You know, we have to experience some kind of counterpoint in order to experience courage. And so learning how to transform fear into courage, that's the point of it. The point of having these emotions as human being is to learn how to transform it, to transform frustration with patience. When you're around somebody who's frustrating you or life is frustrating you, the point is, the spiritual lesson in that is to transform it into patience. That's the goal. And so to be able to look at emotions such as depression, to transform it into hope, loneliness, to transform it into a sense of connection, frustration into patience, anxiety transformed into inner calm. How do you do that? How do you find calm in the face of anxiety? These are all beautiful, wonderful spiritual precepts, and they're the reason we have emotions. This is why we have emotions. Emotions are just energy. And so learning how to transform energy, we've put names to these different energies, but learning how to transform them and not be brought down by them is a hugely spiritual, heroic act to me.
Interesting. I know one of the things that you work with a lot is dreams.
Yes.
And dreams tell us things. And I think most of us say we don't really pay a lot of attention to our dreams. But why are dreams important?
Well, if you want to be emotionally free and have that kind of liberation, it's important to attend to what goes on during dream time. And we sleep so many hours in our lifetime. I think it's a total of 5.5 years we're asleep. We might as well make the best of what goes on there. And looking at dreams helps you see emotions and how to transform them. If you're frustrated, if you're angry in a dream, then this is the key material for you to learn how to transform it so you're not imprisoned by it. To be able to look at your dreams, I had a dream. I was getting very frustrated at one point of writing this book because I was pushing and not much was coming, and I was amping up the frustration cycle, and I had a dream that a phone number came through. And I went and I called the phone number, and they answered the phone. This is UCLA Labor and Delivery Room. And it instantly lightened me up. It was a healing dream for me. It was saying, okay, you're frustrated, but the frustration is not the key to any door. And so dreams provided the humor, the cosmic humor, thank God for cosmic humor, to lighten me up, to let me know I was watched over, taken care of, there's an order to all this, and to just, you know, go at my own pace with and experience the joy of the writing rather than getting frustrated. And that helped me have more patience. So dreams, you know, a brilliant solution to me finding more patience. But the goal to overcoming frustration is to find patience. To me, it's more important to learn how to find that spiritual, beautiful thing we call patience than it is to be frustrated by whatever it is that's frustrating us. That's not the point. The point is to find patience. In every spiritual tradition, patience has been revered as a spiritual quality, revered. And in psychiatry, I was never taught to teach my patients patience or to develop patience in myself or what are the attributes of that to overcome frustration. And what's different with the emotional freedom strategies is that I don't look at the point of emotions as trying to get rid of difficult emotions. I don't see it that way. I see it as emotions are spiritual teachers that are meant to transform. And so if we could learn the lesson of dealing with frustration with patients when we're in that long line in the market, and instead of being frustrated and pushing and getting snippy, that we can use it as an experience to be patient, to do it differently, to do the smaller things in life, the mundane miracles that happened in an extraordinary way. And when we can do that, I mean, just try it. Because that's one of my strategies for developing patience, is finding the longest possible line you can find, like at the DMV or in the market, and you stand in it, but you do it in a different way. And you do it, you let somebody in front of you. And then you'll see what happens when you let somebody in front of you. It's like you've given them $1 million. They cannot believe it. And so when you do things in a contrary way and you can see the goodness that happens, you can see how you're freed up. It's so much of a better way than standing in a line, being impatient and pushy and angry and so forth. I mean, I once saw a woman in an express line get so angry at somebody who cut in front of her, she sprayed them with a can of whipped cream. not anything I would recommend, but this is how people are pushed. You know, they're so pushed. Everyone's so on the edge. And we can't afford to indulge that anymore. You know, I wrote Emotional Freedom because we're living in times that demand we be our best selves and that we are able to have strategies to find that and not indulge our lower selves. Because if we do, then it's all over. I believe that personal transformation in terms of emotions brings us more light, liberates us, but it also creates more light in the world, and it models a different way of doing things. Instead of snipping at people and snapping at them, you're empathically trying to sense what's behind, why they're acting the way they're acting, so at least you could find some compassion when you're angry. Now, compassion is the key to anger. There is no way to be able to transform anger without finding compassion for the person who's making you angry. There is no way. And this is a radical concept to the linear mind. I mean, as a psychiatrist, I work a lot with intuition. And intuition is non-linear knowledge that comes through vehicles other than the linear mind, such as gut feelings or dreams or premonitions or senses of energy. You see, so the linear mind thinks, how can you be compassionate with somebody who just took advantage of me like that? And the Dalai Lama tells, there's a wonderful story about the Dalai Lama where a woman went to interview him and she was waiting for him. And in the meantime, she was witnessing a man beat his dog. And she went to the Dalai Lama and said, now, how do you reconcile this? And he says, you need to be as sorry for the man as you are for the dog. And this is the basis for emotional freedom. If we can't find that place, that doesn't mean forgiving the man for beating the dog. It doesn't mean that. It means finding compassion for the suffering in the man that could cause him to beat the dog. And this applies to your mother, it applies to your boss, it applies to everyone in your life, is taking that extra stretch of the heart to try and find that. Because if we don't, then there are enormous repercussions personally and globally.
It'll eat us up.
It'll eat us up. Resentments will eat us up. And this is a stretch because it's much easier to dump our anger on other people and feel better for the moment. All right, but that doesn't get us anywhere. You know, in terms of personally, if you want to be more liberated or more light-filled, spiritually, it gets you nowhere. You have to have more awareness than that, you know, compassionate self-awareness, saying, all right, this person really made me angry. I'm going to pause when I'm agitated. I'm going to center myself. I'll express to a friend why I'm angry, but I'm going to approach this person in an extraordinary way. I'm going to come and deal with it from my heart. I'm going to deal with it listening empathically to the person. I'm going to be solution-oriented. I'm not going to be reactive and just reacting every time my buttons are pushed. That won't make us free. But what will make us free is breathing, centering, opening up to your spiritual source, knowing that you're bigger than any one emotion. We are bigger than our anger. We are bigger than our fear. And once you could tune into something larger than that and then come back to the situation, then you're in a position of power and you own the moment.
And just a moment for going back to dreams, just to say that it's good to have a pencil, pen, and a piece of paper by your bed when you have a dream and you wake up, because... But I guarantee you, if you don't write it down, you'll not remember it.
That's really hard
to remember.
Oh, that's right. It's important to have your dream journal, a pen, and sometimes you could have the dream pens where you actually press down on the paper and it creates light,
Yeah. The
dream pen. Right. So that's very important.
I'm speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff, author of Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. My guest is Dr. Judith Orloff. She's the author of Emotional Freedom and a host of other books, including Second Sight, Positive Energy, Intuitive Healing, and others. And Judith, you know, you've mentioned enlightenment, and it's such a misunderstood term and word, and I'm wondering how you define enlightenment. What is enlightenment to you?
Well, enlightenment in terms of emotions means being mindful of our emotions and being able to transcend and transform what is negative and small within us. and realizing that there is something larger than ourselves, that it is at work on this material plane, and that when we partner with the something larger, when we intuitively know it and sense it, in the middle of the night when our mind is racing and we're afraid and worry comes upon us.
3 a.m.
3 a.m., always 3 a.m., that we have something to connect to. And this is not just an intellectualization. This is a visceral, intuitive, deep knowing that is so important for emotional freedom. As a psychiatrist, I was taught at UCLA to give out medications, and that different emotions such as depression or anxiety was biologically related, and there was always a biochemical abnormality associated with various emotions, and we did even very little psychotherapy. But what I know now, you know, as a psychiatrist and an intuitive, is that there is a deep spiritual meaning to our emotions, and it is so much more than simply biochemical, though I see biochemistry as divine. I see biochemistry and energy and all kinds of elements, the psychology of emotions, all as divine. But it's important to be able to see how these emotions that everybody has, the little frustrations of everyday life, the angers that we have, these are all an impetus to grow larger, to grow more enlightened, rather than doing it in the same old way that doesn't work. And so it requires being mindful of what you're feeling, telling yourself you're a great hero for having this mindfulness and wanting to transform it and wanting to come from a larger place. I have patients who've come to me and they say, oh, I wish I could be coming into your office with something more spiritual, but I'm having an anxiety attack. And to me, this is the crux of spirituality. This is where we start. This is where we go in and say, okay, you know, what is the spiritual lesson that anxiety is teaching you, and how can you transform anxiety into a state of inner calm? What can we do to work together to do that? What strategies can we use? And always, even if somebody's on medication, when they come to me as a patient, I suggest a spiritual path as part of the recovery from depression, or part of the understanding of why we're so fearful, you know, and what fear has to do with our awakening, how fear, the point of fear, as I see it, is to stimulate us to find courage, and that we must be committed, if we want to be emotionally free, to not leading a fear-driven life. And so when we're bombarded with fear in our culture and the airwaves within ourselves, our own negative voices, this is our job description, is to transcend fear. That's why we're here. Just think if you got that in this lifetime. Just think if you were able to do it even half the time. I mean, what a great victory that would be. Because I will not let darkness win. I'm one of those people that I will go down fighting to the last to fight darkness. And part of darkness is fear. And all the negative emotions come from fear. Fear is the mother of negative emotions. Love is the mother of positive emotions. And from every positive emotion comes compassion, comes patience, comes calm. From fear, it comes anger, loneliness, anxiety. And so we need to be aware of fear in ourselves and say, okay, I'm not going to be caught up in the muck of the fear. All right. And the way not to be caught up in the muck of the fear is to frame it from a spiritual standpoint. And when the fear comes, you immediately have to ask yourself, what is the lesson here in terms of transforming it with courage? Instead of, I'm so afraid, I'm going to go into my small self, I'm going to get depressed, I'm going to withdraw, I'm going to move to Europe, I'm going to, whatever, you know, we're all thinking, you know, and everybody has fear, everyone on this planet has fear, and our spiritual task is to learn how to transform it and to do it together. So imagine a world where people are dedicated to not making decisions, personal or political, based on fear, knowing that that isn't the right thing to do in order to expand. And so to first of all frame fear with what spiritual lesson can I learn and how can this help me develop courage. Those are always the first two things to say to yourself. And then to express the fear honestly and openly, unairbrushed, to a supportive person. You don't immediately go from fear to courage. There's no way. You have to be honest. You have to say, I'm terrified I'll never be a success. I'm terrified of illness. I saw my mother was sick, and now I can't even visit my friend who's sick because I'm so scared. Now, whatever your fear is, I'm afraid of dying alone in a nursing home and drooling. Now, whatever it is, you know, bigger fears, smaller fears, you must identify them without shame, with total compassion. We all have fears. You know, as a psychiatrist, I've had the honor of really listening to people over in 2 decades and listening to their fears unvarnished. And what a beautiful thing. I mean, how honest and real. It isn't about putting on a face or trying to have a smile. It's about, all right, what is the fear and how is it getting you and how can we transform it? And then going back, of course, psychologically to what pinpointed the fear, you know, were your parents alcoholic? And, you know, did you develop, you know, a fear of abandonment because your parents were never around? And to do the psychological work, but also to open up spiritually by 3-minute meditation that I recommend in the book, where you, in 3 minutes, is all you need to get in touch with the courage and to shift states of awareness. So you've got to shift out of the fear into a larger space. And you can't really do that with the mind totally. I mean, you can do the psychological work, but it's important to sit quietly for 3 minutes, begin to breathe. Breath is a sacred prana of life. It is. We're not taught that in the West. It's sacred, and we breathe, inhale and exhale, and then all the fears will float by and look at them like clouds in the sky and go back to the breath, breathe, center, and focus on the most beautiful positive thing you can envision, and focus your attention on that so that the fear becomes background noise. It's the spiritual act of shifting levels of awareness so that you change the frequency in yourself and you focus on something that's more positive. You breathe. One thing I love to do is just to open up to what I consider my higher power, which is love. You know, the invisible spaces between things, the ethereal, and to just open up and let it wash all over me. And then suddenly I'm not small anymore. Fear makes us small and makes us stupid so that we don't make good decisions. And what opening up to whatever your higher power is, something larger than yourself, you might still feel the fear, but it's not as big. And you feel the protection and the connection with something larger that will instill courage in you that the personal self can never find alone.
To go back to enlightenment and the dark, you mentioned the darkness, and I think of evil. Does evil exist?
Well, I think that darkness exists, and I think it exists within the human beings, within all of us. And I believe that the most, quote, evil things that are done on earth, we all have the capacity for these. I mean, if you can really get into yourself, into your most primal, primitive brain self, we all have the capacity for murder. We all have the capacity for all the horrendous crimes that people are acting out. All right. But our great gift and emotional freedom comes when we make a decision not to come from that place. We cannot fuel that dog. We cannot feed that dog. You know, we must feed the dog that's of wisdom inside of ourselves, you know, the higher part of ourselves. And the ability to say, okay, yes, I could kill this person. I'm so angry with them, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to act out just because they did something that makes me feel hurt. I'm not going to kill them. I'm not going to dump on them. I'm going to breathe center, look at anger as an opportunity to find compassion. See, we have to reprogram our thoughts and the way we deal with emotions. And that's why for enlightenment, to find enlightenment, I think it's necessary to take these steps to see anger as the opportunity to find compassion. That's the reason we're angry. That's the main reason, as I see it, as a psychiatrist and intuitive and working with my own emotions and the emotions of others, that is the spiritual reason. We get angry so that we can grow larger than anger, deal with it in ourselves, and find compassion. Because when we learn to transform negative into positive, not by becoming Pollyannish or airbrushing it or stuffing it under, but really working with it, becoming larger through spiritual work and through understanding, and then actually finding the compassion, you can feel what that does to your heart. There's a chapter on different emotional types, and one of the emotional types I talk about is the emotional empath. The emotional empath is somebody who's very sensitive and is able to sense and absorb the energy of others. So therefore, they take on what's negative in their own bodies and can become depressed and anxious when it's not even their own. You see, I'm an emotional empath, so I have a lot of interest in this emotional type. But what happens if you're an empath is you watch the 11 o'clock news and you see all of that negativity and fear mongering, and you take it on into your own body. You have insomnia, you start feeling depressed, you start feeling anxious or upset or tense, and you don't know why. You don't make that connect that because you tend to absorb energy and emotions, you're taking on the negativity, the huge negativity that's in the world or from other people. And so if you are an empath, you have to learn how to, number one, identify it. Number two, learn to breathe it out of your system, meditate so that you can center yourself and that you work on your own fear issues so that you don't have these hot buttons. So I've had to work with this in my own life so that I don't take on your depression or your fear. I don't want to. It's none of my business, actually, to do that or when I work with patients.
And so you create a screen for yourself? How do you do that?
Well, my main practice is through meditation to center myself and to connect with my heart and to grow larger than the emotion. However, one of the techniques I talk about is learning to put a shield of white light all around you if necessary. And this works for a lot of people. It's very effective. A lot of therapists and, you know, healers use this, where you put a shield of white light all around you, every single inch. So when you're around somebody who's a rageaholic, or you're around enormous negativity, that doesn't get absorbed into your own body because it doesn't make you more compassionate to absorb other people's negative emotions and take on their pain. I am quite convinced of that. And I think people are confused about that because they're trained in various religions to be compassionate. I'm going to take on your pain. And I'm telling you, as a standpoint of an emotional empath, if I did that, I would be dead. I would have no energy. I would be so anxious. I'd be a chameleon. I'd be so anxious or depressed or frustrated. I'd be taking on everything that's floating around in all those shopping malls. An emotional empath goes to a shopping mall where all those different energy fields are out there and those emotions are floating around. I would walk in as a child totally fine and walk out anxious or depressed or exhausted because I picked up other people's emotional energy or physical energy in crowded places. So if you are an emotional empath, then you need to know about it and to develop strategies to make yourself freer so that you can have all the compassion and the increased sensuality that comes from being an empath, but you're not a sponge for your husband's anger or your child's depression, whatever. You don't want to do that.
I'm speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff. She's the author of Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. And the website for more information about Judith's work and resources and also her speaking schedule, you can go to Dr. Judith Orloff, and that's DrJudith Orloff, ORLOFF.com, DrJudithOrloff.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. Speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff, and she's a board-certified psychiatrist, and she teaches at UCLA. And she's the author of Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. Judith, we were talking about the empath as one of the emotional types, and we wanted to talk about the other side, the positive side of that, and then the other types, the intellectual, the gusher, and the rock.
Yes, there are four emotional types I talk about in Emotional Freedom, and it's important to recognize your emotional type so you know the template from which you operate, your basic tendencies. And the point is to realize the positives and the negatives of each type and balance them. One is not better than the other necessarily. I just focused on the emotional empath because I am one, and I tend to have more of an interest in it because I've worked so much to balance my own energies with, you know, being an empath. And I just wanted to go over a couple of the questions if people are...
Please.
If you want to know you're an empath, that's on page 108. And you can ask yourself, if you're an emotional empath, if you're this type, have I been labeled as too sensitive or overly emotional? You know, have you been labeled that? If a friend is distraught, do I start feeling it too? Are my feelings easily hurt? Am I emotionally drained by crowds and require time alone to be revived? Emotional empaths notoriously like to go home, and they love to bring their own car places, as I do, so I can escape. Do my nerves get frayed by noise, smells, or excessive talk? Do I prefer taking my own car places so I can leave when I please? Now, as an emotional empath, I find that I can only stay 3 hours in a circumstance, a social circumstance, and I could love the people madly, but I have to get out because I get overstimulated and I'm done. And so I need to go home. So it's a good thing to take care of yourself in your energy and your emotions so that you can leave when you feel comfortable.
So to know your limitations, to set limits. Yes.
To set them and to not feel ashamed and to be very clear with your friends. It's not them. You love them. You just have to go home at that point. And then do I overeat to cope with emotional stress? Because oftentimes people overeat in order to bulk up so they don't absorb emotions from others. Because when you have more weight on you, you tend to not absorb negative emotions as much. And so it's important to have a meditation pillow right by the refrigerator. So if you're upset, then before you go for the food, you can sit on the cushion, take a breath, center yourself, and find your center before you use the food to bulk up so you don't absorb somebody's anger or whatever you're experiencing. These are very practical tips. And then the last sign, if you're an emotional empath, is am I afraid of becoming engulfed by intimate relationships? As oftentimes emotional empaths come to me and they want to be in a relationship and yet they're single. What's going on? And when I work with them, is what I find is that there's a subliminal fear of getting engulfed if you live with someone simply because the traditional way of living with someone is to stay in the same space. And to an emotional empath, this is not comfortable. An emotional empath needs to have their own space so that they can feel safe. And so what I've done as an empath, especially when I travel, because I can't bear to be in the same room with somebody, you know, for too long, I need to have adjoining rooms and I need to have my own bathroom. If I don't have my own bathroom, I'm not going to last very long. So I need to shut the door and go away from the person. And this is just something I've come to honor. And I tell my partners this and it all works out. But these are creative ways of partnership. And also square footage is very important for an emotional empath, is that, you know, you may have to have separate spaces within the house, even separate wings or separate houses, you see, but you have to have this creative conversation to take care of yourself. And then suddenly you're able to be in a relationship because you're not threatened by being engulfed. The feeling of being engulfed is very threatening for an emotional empath because they'll take on all your anger, all your sadness. And you might not have worded it that way, you know, or thought of it that way. But if you do now and it makes sense to you, then some of these techniques will really work. So it could allow you to find the love that you want. And so the upside to being an emotional empath is that you're extremely compassionate and you're extremely sensual. Being an empath, it's like touching a piece of cloth with 50 fingers instead of one. Now you're able to feel the silk, you're able to feel the cotton in ways that other people can't. And I love that opening to sensuality, and I love the deep compassion that sensing what's going on in other people emotionally lets you have, as long as you don't absorb it. You see, when you absorb it, then you start to get exhausted and upset. So there's plus side to being an emotional empath and a negative side if you take on the emotions of others. All right, so that's one emotional type I talk about in the book.
I'm thinking about there was a time in my life where I was kind of like in a personally imposed sabbatical, and I used to go to Golden Gate Park and the Arboretum there, and there's a place in the Arboretum where differently abled people can go, particularly people who don't have sight, and they've put all these different plants and mosses and different things you can touch and feel. And I used to go through there and I'd close my eyes and touch these different things. It was just so, and it really, you know, it was really so great to, you know, run your fingers over moss and not to look at it, but just to feel it. Was it just another way of feeling it?
Well, that is an empath, is the 50 fingers compared to one touching the same thing that another person is touching. And it's all those increased sensitivity receptors, too.
Yeah. It was a great, it was always great to do that. It was wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So what about, let's talk about the other types. And what about the intellectual type?
Well, the intellectual is somebody who primarily analyzes the world through their mind, and they tend to think about emotions rather than feel them. And the intellectuals can be creative and you know, incredibly in touch in terms of their minds, brilliant minds, but when it comes to emotions, sometimes they're not as juicy or as fiery as they could be. And so they tend to have a disconnect. And the downside of an intellectual is they can become a disembodied head. You know, without any connection to their body, their intuition, their senses. The plus side is that they're brilliant conversationalists. They can talk about all kinds of issues, and it's stimulating. And they're so smart and charming and wonderful. And so there's the upside to being the intellectual. And if you want to know if you're an intellectual, it's on page 103. You can ask yourself these questions. Do I believe that I can think my way to any solution? When presented with a problem, do I immediately start analyzing the pros and cons rather than noticing how it makes me feel? And this is key. Am I uncomfortable when people get highly emotional? See, that's a sign that you're uncomfortable with emotions. And oh, and this is a big thing with intellectuals. Do I tend to get overly serious? Intellectuals can become very intense and overly serious, and it's not that much fun to be around. And do I prefer planning to being spontaneous? You see, so the intellectual has its upside.
Every plan is going to, there's no plan that ever gets fulfilled.
No.
Never happens.
No, and it gets to be a big drudgery instead of spontaneously doing something. So the key is for the intellectual to maintain this amazing intellect, but begin to open up to emotions also.
It's like, I mean, in some ways you have to plan when you go to the grocery store, that kind of thing, but there's something to be said. So, I mean, this is really definitely something I work with all the time, and that is to really live in the moment, spontaneously.
Yes.
And sometimes I have battle with others in my life that, you know, like, well, we have to have a plan, you know? It's like,
right.
Well, yeah, okay, have a plan, but know that it's going to change. It's never going to be this. It's always going to change. And so it's like keeping that space alive and open that you can move from that spontaneous space and
yes.
not be attached, because we get attached to the plan. And we want the plan. It was kind of like working with the plan and seeing that as the wherewithal and be with all, you know?
Yes. Well, the key is balance. I mean, sometimes a plan is very necessary and essential. You need to have a plan to do something, and it's a great, you know, exciting plan, but sometimes you don't. So
have to have a business plan if you have a business, that kind of thing, yeah. But even in that area, it's good to have that knowledge that you can change the plan and you can adjust it and you can move within the plan.
Yes, well, that's the intellectual's great challenge, is to find that sense of flexibility and to balance a little bit of the empathic qualities and the emotional qualities so that there's balance within the type. I think we're born with these types, and we don't want to change them, but we want to optimize them. And so the way to optimize the intellect or the intellectual is to incorporate more intuition, to listen to the body more, to walk outside and feel the wind and look at the stars and be able to channel your attention to these places rather than simply being in a rut of thinking about things just intellectually. You see, there's a plus and a minus to all of these emotional types. And you just work with what you got. You balance the rest. I mean, I suggest going through these different emotional types and taking other qualities from the others that you like and begin to experiment with them. I mean, all of this is emotional improvisation. That's what's so beautiful about it. It's not drudgery. Emotional freedom need not be drudgery. It's about experimenting with how you can grow larger and seeing if it fits for you. Some of the techniques I discuss in the book may not resonate, and some may resonate. Just simply go to the ones that resonate.
Yes. What about the gusher?
Oh, the
gusher. That's a great word, gusher. You know, gush. You can feel it. You can feel the the action of that word.
Well, the gusher is somebody who likes to tell you about their emotions and every detail of what you're feeling.
Oh, gosh, I know a few of those people.
And they're just virtuosos at knowing their emotions. They'll tell you if they're angry, if they're, you know, sad. You'll hear every single detail of what goes on. And the plus side to that is that gushers are very in touch with their emotions, and they're not going to bottle up their stress. They are not. They're going to express it to you. They're going to grab you in the market and tell you how they're feeling. There's a joke where they need to go to the 12-step program on and on and on and on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, on and 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 on.
But the upside to a gusher, and I'm part gusher because I love to process my feelings with my friends.
We have a piece of these in all of us, I think.
Yes, a piece of us, yeah. A piece in each of us. But I think some tend to do it more than others.
Yes, for sure.
But a gusher is emotionally articulate, and negativity doesn't fester. And you have a supportive network of friends. That's really important. You're not holding everything in. And you value intimate relationships. And you're a sensitive listener also, where the gusher will listen to somebody else gush. So that's all positive. But the downside is that you're a candidate for becoming a drama queen or drama king.
We all know a few of those, I'm sure.
We do, and you may turn friends into therapists, and you may not find the self-sufficiency when something happens to you emotionally that upsets you. You don't immediately go inside. You don't take a breath. You don't try to intuit the decision yourself. You know, you go too quickly to others. And so the key is with the gusher is to balance it, you know, not to go so quickly, always to pick up the phone. Now, to also spend time going inward. All right, this person made me angry and I feel miserable. Breathe, center, go inside. Ask yourself, how can anger help me develop compassion here? What is the spiritual lesson of the anger? And spend some time with yourself before you pick up the phone. That's the way to balance the gusher.
So we're going to come back. When we come back with Judith, we're going to talk about the rock. And you're listening to Judith Orloff speak about her book, Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. We'll be right back. And my name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. I'm speaking with Dr. Judith Orloff, and she's the author of Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. Also, books like Second Sight and Positive Energy, Intuitive Healing, and Dr. Judith Orloff's Guide to Intuitive Healing. Really wonderful books. And you can find out more about them on her website. That's drjudithorloff.com. It's drjudithorloff, drjudithorloff.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, and that's newdimensions.org. Judith, we were talking about the four emotional types, and the one we didn't cover was the rock. So perhaps we could just talk about the rock for a minute or so.
Yes. Well, the fourth type is called the rock. And the rock is somebody who is emotionally strong for themselves and others, as well as being practical. And here's a quiz that I have in the book to decide if you are a rock. You have to ask yourself, is it easier to listen than to share my feelings? Do I often feel like the most dependable person in the room? Do people tend to come to me with their troubles? Am I able to stay calm when others are upset? And this is a big one. Would I rather avoid introspection?
I don't look at it. No.
I don't know. I want to listen to you, but I don't want to look at it. And I'm fine the way I am. All right. And the last question is, am I generally satisfied with the status quo in relationships, but others are often trying to draw me out emotionally? You know, I've worked with a lot of couples like this, where frequently it's the woman who wants to express the feelings and the rock, the man who is the emotional type of the rock, who's sitting there going, well, I don't really need to talk about it. and who isn't really a good listener to, at times, to other people's feelings, although they can listen, but they just can't express themselves. And so oftentimes the rock can seem a bit like an herbivore, you know, very slow moving and a little bit dull and passionless. And so the key for the rock is to be able to get in touch more with the spontaneity, with their emotions and that aliveness in themselves so that they can share more. They need to really train themselves to share one feeling a day, whatever it is, to get in touch with that feeling. You know, I feel ecstatic. I feel joyful. And to tell people and to be able to feel the energy of the telling.
Or I feel awful.
Yes, or I feel awful.
Yeah.
I feel depressed, or I feel frustrated by the situation, or I feel lonely.
And the thing is, if we don't express it, it'll come out in some other way, usually a negative way, if we don't express our negative feelings. Is that true?
Yes, and with the rock, what happens is that their passion gets taken away, so they're bland.
Yes.
And so the wife or the spouse
bland,
is
like
always...
boring, I don't want to be around you, that kind of thing.
Right, and they're always trying to get them to talk about their feelings or be more juicy or more fiery. And that, you don't want to be bland. You want your emotions give you fire. So it's important, at least a little bit for the rock, to get in, to experiment with the emotions. And it takes some discipline and mindfulness, even if you don't want to. Just try it anyways and see the effect it has on others and on yourself. Because then you'll get more fire and more energy. I mean, some of these things you really need to say, yes, I'm going to try them out in the spirit of playfulness and the spirit of emotional freedom.
Sure.
I'm going to just try it. Then see how your body feels. See how you feel. Don't do anything if it doesn't benefit your life. Nothing I'm suggesting is important unless it benefits you and liberates you. And you will feel that liberation. Just try some of these things, and you've got to feel them in your life and see the reaction of people around you and how they respond to you. Suddenly, you're not quite so bland anymore, and you get the reaction of people's eyes sparkling and people coming towards you and people being excited about you.
Yeah, I think of the Buddha when saying in his deathbed, his words were that, you know, don't do it because I say so, but do it because it works for you. Kind of like, that's the way it is. It's like, do it because it works, not because I say so or because, you know, it's in the book or exactly, but really to look at it, to actually work with these things in a practical way.
That's exactly it. It must resonate in you. Otherwise, it's useless.
Yes. Yeah. So talking about, again, that getting, being a rock and being, nobody wants to be around you. It reminds me of being lonely and the loneliness that permeates our society. So many people feel alone and lonely. So what about loneliness and how we can transform that cure for loneliness?
Yes, well, the spiritual reason for feeling lonely is to transform it with a sense of connection. And that means a connection with the self and a connection to others. It's not just a connection to others. In this life, to spiritually grow, you need to connect with yourself and feel the home that's inside there, as well as connecting to others. I mean, sometimes because I'm an empath and I'm around people a lot, where I get lonesome for myself, or I need to go home and just spend some time with me, because that's where my home is, that's where my core is. And I think it's important for everyone, if you feel lonely, to be able to find what your core is. I've worked with so many people who come to me, you know, who haven't been married or they're single now and they want to be in relationships. I worked with this one woman and she joined a cyber dating service and she kept meeting guys that were wrong, totally wrong for her. One Hollywood director who said in his must-haves that his partner must be an expert in tantric lovemaking. You know, oh my God. How horrible is that? I mean, what pressure, you know, and how inappropriate to put that out there, that's what you want.
Yeah.
And so she was feeling lonelier and, you know, she described herself as a loser. And so we worked with loneliness in a different way. It's not just about finding a partner, although finding a partner can really help with loneliness. But one key with loneliness is, and I feel very strongly about this, it's a big myth in our culture, is that finding a partner will not make you whole. Finding a partner can complement you and make you more aware of your own wholeness. But it's kind of like you can't be a little bit pregnant. You can't be a little bit whole. You're already whole. The partner will just allow you to feel it more. Therefore, you know, part of the spiritual teaching of emotions is start with yourself. You know, try and just spend some time alone with yourself a little bit. You know, but maybe if that's too hard, go spend time with a tree. You know, trees and animals are wonderful companions, but feel yourself with that tree or with that animal so you know who you are, know who your spirit is, not just as a reflection of how you are with other human beings.
And nature is, I think, a great way to get in touch with not being lonely.
Oh, yes, to feel the ecstasy of nature. But to start with yourself, but also know if you're isolating. Also know that to stay home, you know, yet again, and not going out and not putting it out there, that you want to be with loving, supportive people, not people you're not in sync with. The thing is, you have to find soul companions. You've got to use your intuition to find people that you're in sync with and not be afraid to go after that.
So many times, I mean, particularly in this culture, there's an overuse of antidepressants. And so often the solution is, okay, we'll give them a drug. We'll give them a drug.
Right.
And now we have, I mean, we're probably the largest user of drugs on the planet.
That's right.
So many levels. And what about that? What about the overuse of antidepressants?
Well, that's the big problem I have with traditional psychiatry, because in my psychiatric training, I was the head of the affective disorders clinic, which meant I dealt with people who were depressed or had bipolar disorder, manic depression. And the main treatment was giving out lithium for bipolar disorder, giving out antidepressants, Prozac, Paxil, Celexa, in those days, nortriptyline, Elavil. Although antidepressants may have a role in somebody who has a biochemical imbalance and has a major depression and needs that boost biochemically, it is not ever the only answer. One needs to explore their spiritual relationship to emotions and the psychology of emotions and begin to grow larger than the depression and to find hope. The point of having depression is to find hope. That's the spiritual leap. Even in the depths of the dark night of the soul, is to find the hope, to find the light. This is how the opportunity we're given to stretch ourselves here. It is terrifying. It is difficult. You know, people, you know, and I've said many a time, it's so hard. I want it to be easier. But my point is, and my point of view is, it's hard, but so what? You know, so what? Don't let that stop you. You know, it's all hard, but if you believe in the light and you believe in finding the hope and light in yourself, this is the path to it. And it will help us find a sense of inner peace that is so essential, because without inner peace that comes from emotional freedom, then we have no chance at outer peace. And the beauty of working with some of the techniques I talk about in the book is that you begin to free up yourself and your light. You find the hope even when depressed. You find the courage even when afraid. You find the connection even when lonely. You find the patience even when you're frustrated. You see, when you have a bit of success with that, you can feel how liberating it is compared to the other way. And so it's important to be able to practice this and to gain increasing inner peace so that you feel more liberated and you can relax. You're not always tense. And you could begin to feel that peace, and that peace ripples out into the world. And from my point of view, that is the starting place for peace in the world, is finding it within. There is no other way to do it. Because if you're out there trying to make peace in the world and you're battling with depression and you're battling with all kinds of fears, it is projected outward, and you are not a model for creating the kind of world that you want.
So it's like leaving the house with a smile as opposed to a frown.
Yeah, but feeling the smile inside, or not even feeling the smile inside, dedicated to finding the light even when you don't have the smile inside. And that dedication to the light is what creates peace, because a happy person is not going to press the button to destroy the world. I can guarantee you that. And when you have world leaders out there who have not worked on their anger towards their father, and they're dealing with other political figures, and they're working that out on a political sphere, we're done for it. I mean, we cannot afford that. We need to have leadership where people are working with their negative emotions and understand themselves enough to know not to do that and jeopardize the rest of us.
It's kind of interesting listening to some of the politicians that it's talking about their relationship with their fathers.
Yes. Yeah, oh, isn't it interesting?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, but as opposed to having leaders like the Dalai Lama, or leaders who are mindful of their emotions, said, yes, I'm afraid, but I'm going to not let this fear drive me. I'm going to be conscious of it, not be driven by it. That's the essence of emotional freedom, whether you're in the long line in the supermarket or you're dealing with larger things. That's the core to being free.
Judith, we're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And I want to say that the book Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life, is filled with wonderful solutions and ideas and insights and lots of wonderful quotes as well. It's published by Harmony Books. And if you want more information about Judith's work, you can go to the website, drjudithorloff.com, drjudithorloff.com, or the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Media in Ukiah, California, USA, and is made possible by listener contributions and by the membership support of Friends of New Dimensions. If you'd like to connect with us on the Internet and be part of our New Dimensions in Practice community forum, we'd really love to hear from you. Our address on the web is newdimensions.org. We have lots of exciting things happening on our website, so check us out. We also find over 800 hours of audio dialogues in our archive and other resources. That's newdimensions.org. Executive producer is Michael Toms. Managing producer, Justine Willis-Toms. Post-production editor, Albert Kasselhoff. Webmaster, Chris Pugh. Membership services, Rose Holland. Announcers are Albert Kasselhoff and Dan Drayson. My name is Michael Toms, on behalf of all of the staff at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program happen, and all those who are members of Friends of New Dimensions, you make this program happen too. Thank you so much for your support. And members of our affiliate stations, I'm wishing you lots of emotional freedom in your life. This is program number 3281.
New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard and thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, to become a member of Friends of New Dimensions, or to purchase downloadable copies of this and many other New Dimensions programs, visit our website, newdimensions.org. Or you can reach us at 707-468-5215.